investors have a view of this sector in general. Every company has a low valuation, and certainly in mortgage. There are some winners currently in the housing market that are doing better. But by and large, housing finance is not an industry that's getting a lot of airtime from an investor point of view. That's just a reality. I think, you know, you can try, and a lot of things go into that. I think what people are looking at is the companies that are going to come through this as winners.
5 months ago, in October of 2023, Frank Martell joined me on stage at Housing Wire Annual. We had a phenomenal, transparent conversation about his new role as CEO of loanDepot and progress toward his Vision 2025 plan. In today's episode of Powerhouse, we're bringing you a live recording of this conversation. We call these sessions Battlefield Playbooks, and this is a taste of the interviews that you'll experience at The Gathering, Housing Wire's tentpole event, which is coming up on April 21st through 24th in Scottsdale, Arizona. This year, we made a big move of merging Housing Wire Annual with the Real Trends Gathering of Eagles. This event brings together executives from across mortgage and real estate brokerage under one roof. This is the opportunity for learning. It's the opportunity for developing commercial and business opportunities. This is the most powerful room in housing. I hope you enjoy this live interview with Frank Martell, CEO of loanDepot.
We're bringing back the CEO playbook concept right now, and I'm thrilled to welcome Frank Martell, CEO of loanDepot. Thank you for joining us, Frank.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Let's have a seat.
Good morning, everybody.
So, Frank, arguably, you signed up for one of the hardest jobs in housing, joining loanDepot in 2022 as CEO after a really successful run at CoreLogic. And if I understand the background correctly, starting as CFO, the COO, to CEO at CoreLogic, great run, and now loanDepot. So tell us about the decision to come out of retirement and take on this challenge of leading loanDepot into the future.
Sure, yeah. I had probably one of the briefest retirements in history, about a week and a half. That was a bunch of trips to Home Depot and the supermarket. And I quickly realized that retirement wasn't quite for me at that point in time. So I recalibrated and actually had a wonderful opportunity to come to loanDepot. As CEO of CoreLogic, had a lot of exposure to Anthony and the loanDepot team. Really admired the team, smart, young, aggressive, energetic. And so really appealed to me the opportunity to come in and work with that team. And also, obviously, the market is the market, and
absolutely,
it changed dramatically. And love a challenge, and certainly it's been a challenge, but it's been a rewarding one. And I've really loved every minute of my now 18 months at loanDepot.
So shortly after you joined, you announced a vision for the future and looking forward to the next few years. So tell us about what you, and in 2022, when you joined the company, what you wanted to achieve with this business, and then how, or if not, how has that vision changed as we've gone through the last 18 months?
Sure. Yeah, look, I think as any CEO, one of my jobs and a CEO's job is to have a vision for the business and to look forward, not just today, but tomorrow. What's tomorrow going to look like, and how to position the company for success in the longer term? And so we put into place a Vision 2025 program, which really looked at where we want to take the company as we go through this cycle, and come out the other end as a stronger, better, and more successful company. So put that into place. You know, the market has changed a lot. I think it's legged down about five times since I've joined the company, and you have to react to that and adjust to that. So the Vision 2025 was built to have a little bit of wiggle room in it.
Okay.
And to adjust it. And it's a lot about, you know, addressing and resetting for today's reality, but also looking at, you know, what are the opportunities out there for tomorrow? And, you know, housing is a huge asset class, biggest on the planet, complex, ever-changing. And that's one of the fun things about being in the industry, is to be in that kind of ecosystem, trying to figure out how to bring better solutions and how to promote sustainable home ownership.
So it sounds like you had a lot of exposure to the business and to Anthony through your time at CoreLogic. As you looked at the business with an objective lens, as you were taking this new executive responsibility, how did you evaluate some of the strengths of the loanDepot business and the areas that you needed to bolster strength to be able to achieve this Vision 2025?
Yeah, look, I think, first of all, you know, Anthony and I are tremendously complementary. So I've learned a lot from Anthony. And
tell us about that. What's the compliment? What were his strengths and yours? How do they complement each other?
Well, if you look at what he's achieved in terms of building a company from scratch, and a big company, an important company, and one full of talented people, it's remarkable. I've been in private companies, public companies, and big and small and medium-sized ones. So I've had a little bit broader, I think, exposure, especially now we're a public company.
Absolutely.
To what the public markets look like and what they demand. So we are very much complementary. We interact constantly. And he's got a real vision for what the future looks like, and so do I. So we kind of work on that together, and it's worked out great. I mean, we just re-upped our strategic vision into 2026, and I think it's really exciting to look at as we get through this down cycle, which we're still likely to face a tough market in 24. I'm feeling pretty good about the rebounding into probably the spring selling season in 25, and so we're working to make money in this market, and then as the cycle turns, to build the company and accelerate growth in a profitable, sustainable way.
Okay, so Vision 25 is extended out to 2026. I'm sure there's some iterations in that. What are the changes from Vision 2025 to this extended plan? Like, and you said you built in some wiggle room. So, you know, learning more about the business, learning about the every new dynamic the market hands
sure.
us. How does the vision evolve?
Yeah. So, what we're looking at now is what investments should we be making? Because, you know, investing in the business and the infrastructure and the capabilities take time.
Yep.
So where should we place our bets, knowing that those will come to fruition toward the end of 24 and into 25. And we are investing in both fundamental underlying systems of record, like the LOS platforms, but also looking at point of sale. Because as we talk about in the public market, the future is going to be about the home buyer, the first-time home buyer. We talk about affordable, and there's a lot around that. But certainly the first-time home buyer of the future is going to be different than what we saw in the past. And so they're going to require different solutions, different interfaces. And so we have a lot of investment going into how we interact with them, how we make them successful homeowners, and how do we make the experience a little less painful and more productive.
So when you think about, as a CEO, the near-term and long-term investments that you make in the company. I think of near-term and loan origination, whether we're thinking about recruiting or lead gen, the investments that can pay off in quarters, not years, and then technology and infrastructure and ops, it takes like a longer time to achieve ROI. How do the public markets kind of perceive the strategies of investing near-term and long-term, and how do you manage that narrative so people understand the path you're going on in terms of capital investment?
Sure. Well, look, as a public company, everything is laid bare. So all your financial numbers, everything is, there's not many secrets in a public, from a financial point of view. Strategically, obviously, we talk about it at a high level. But look, I think that, the important thing in this kind of market is not to try to play to a stock price, because investors have a view of this sector in general. Every company has a low valuation, and certainly in mortgage. And there are some winners currently in the housing market that are doing better. But by and large, housing finance is not an industry that's getting a lot of airtime from an investor point of view. That's just a reality. I think, you know, you can try, and a lot of things go into that. I think what people are looking at is the companies that are going to come through this as winners. And that's where I think that the money, you know, you'll see that as the cycle eases a little bit, you'll see that reflected in stock prices. But there's no silver bullet. And I think the other thing I think as a public company CEO is you have to try to lay out the vision. When I came in and we talked about Vision 2025, a lot of companies in the housing market weren't talking about their plans.
They were still riding high on that origination wave of 2021 and 2022.
Yeah, I think purchase a little bit had a little bit of room left. I think refi was a cataclysmic decline, and loanDepot had a heavy exposure to refi. So that was a little bit adding to the challenge that we had in terms of resetting the organization. But look, we put out there a very specific plan and talked about reducing our staff counts. Nobody likes to reduce staff counts, but you know, we had to do it, and we did it, and we did it in a transparent way. And you know, we're seeing that come to fruition now as we head into 2024, a much better financial situation. That will ultimately drive valuation and public market credibility.
One of my favorite podcast episodes that of Housing News, which I host, was with Anthony, and he talked about investing in refi when the market is there, and the value that it brings to the homeowner and the U.S. economy when we're able to help a large number of homeowners lower their cost of housing finance and their cost of shelter. So there's a big case to be made for how important it is to be able to put the gas on in the refi market when the opportunity is there. But our industry celebrates purchase so much, and we know that the relationship with the home buyer and seller is so incredibly important. As you think about Vision 2026, how do you think, is there a balance and an equilibrium point between refi and purchase that you aspire to, or is that just you ride the market and take opportunity when it's there?
Yeah, I think the financial instruments that support home ownership, to me, they're just tools in the home ownership journey.
Yep.
And so as I look at it, you know, the people that we're going to be serving going forward are different. Gen Z, millennial, the millennials are entering first-time home buying, you know, in force. They're going to power the market the next 25 years. They're different. You know, their income structures are different. You know, their use of technology is different. Their financial literacy is different. So I look at fundamentally that interaction and the support of the home buyer as critical. And I want to own that home buyer through the life of their home ownership journey. So my view is refi plays a role in that context, obviously, as you look at, you know, managing the home ownership journey. So we have four channels. So we have diversified channel structure. So we're able to play across all those spectrums. I think the opportunity for us is how do we do that in the most efficient, lowest cost way so that you can ride the cycles that are inevitable in housing. Certainly, I think that's where a lot of focus on our longer term vision is how to play that role. But also I think we're doing a lot on the, as I mentioned earlier, on the POS platform. When you engage the home buyer of the future, what does that mean and how do you interact? And it's going to be both, to me, personal and also technical and technology driven. So we're working both those angles.
At HousingWire, we're obsessed with data and analytics. Without good insight, there's no shot at operational excellence or innovation. Mortgage lenders that want to thrive in today's market must have access to due diligence and valuation intel, risk management tools, and predictive analytics. And they have to cover everything from the asset to the enterprise. This is exactly what consolidated analytics does. If you want to make more informed decisions and optimize performance, you have to check out Consolidated Analytics. Visit consolidatedanalytics.com to start your journey toward more informed decision making.
Can you paint a picture for us about what that technology ecosystem, brand narrative, communication channel, like how does that work to solve the needs and desires of this next generation home buyer who may have different income streams, different expectations of technology, different expectation for how they interact with brands like loanDepot?
Sure. Yeah, well, look, we have a great servicing portfolio, for example. So there's many answers to your question, Clayton, but I think we have many interactions with vast numbers of customers, both customers and potential customers. The challenge in housing is that, you know, as a mortgage company, you know, you get a lot of leads, you talk to a lot of people, but that all falls away. So we have to figure a way to better manage our contact strategy. So we have an investment around the platform that the repository around the customers, so that we understand them and then apply things like artificial intelligence to look at life events and how do we mechanically know, you know, somebody's going to have somebody likely in college, and how can we reach out to them on more than just an outbound dialing for dollars type of a mode. So we want to know everything that we can about our customers, have it in a modern format, and then be able to use technology to mine that data to play a role for them. Right now, HELOC is a huge area of growth for us. But that's a manifestation of the fact that people have a lot of home equity trapped in their properties. And hey, it could be either debt consolidation or other factors that they tap that. A lot of people don't even know that.
How do conversion rates look like on HELOC right now? I'm hearing commentary from loan originators that there's a lot of interest in tapping home equity, and they go through the application process and you kind of get to that payment, and that 7.5% or 8% like sticker shock starts to kind of come into the picture when you realize how expensive accessing home equity can be in this environment.
Yeah, I think look, we do have the ability. You mentioned earlier, we can do refi, conventional refi, or we can do a home equity loan. So we have a couple of choices depending on what the right solution is for the home buyer. We have great uptake. So that product line has grown dramatically over 6 months to where it's a significant contributor to our financial results. So and that's projected to continue. So the demand is there. And we're trying to make sure that we connect those home buyers to other solutions as well. But the demand is definitely there, and we're seeing a good pull through and an expansion pull through. We expect that to continue for the foreseeable future.
Is the HELOC interest equitable across channels? Are you seeing that interest in retail and consumer direct? Like, how's that conversation coming to the picture?
Yeah, well, we're fortunate because we have a really good consumer direct channel, really great crew there. And so they're leading the charge very definitely.
Okay.
But the volumes are spread between the two conduits.
All right, so as you think back on your experience at CoreLogic, and are there experiences or knowledge sets that you find yourself falling back on now that are influential in the way that you lead and set the vision for loanDepot forward?
Yeah, look, I think CoreLogic was really, a data-centric, so it was really housing data. I think there's a lot of richness there that can be applied in underwriting. A lot of data that we don't traditionally use in the underwriting process that can not only help us to be more informed about the lending process, but also help the homeowner understand the property they're buying. So I think there's definitely a lot to be learned about employing that data. You just have to have it in the right platforms that people can digest it, because it can get overwhelming. But the fact that today we can see three-dimensionally interior, exterior of most properties. And in a lot of cases, we can take people through that journey of, putting their own furniture in there and looking at the stuff. And it makes it a richer, more engaging process. And hopefully it creates more opportunities for revenue for us down the track with other services. Because if you look at the life cycle of a home ownership, it's very long, hopefully. And
getting longer. I mean, it's like the average time in a home has been getting longer over the years, driven by a few factors: COVID, home price appreciation, affordability. But people are staying in their houses.
Well, you hear all the time, the rate lock effect of having 80%, 80+% of the mortgages out there that are 4% or less, and so people don't think they can move because of the interest rate differentials. But and that is part of a current problem we have, but that will change as well.
So tomorrow, Logan Motoshami and Sarah Wheeler are going to be on the stage debating the mortgage rate lockdown theory. So we'll bring some of that perspective to stage. But while we're talking about the housing market, you shared that, if I heard you correctly, that your optimism doesn't really start until 2025. And we've heard some other views from the market from analysts and forecasters that there's a potential to see purchase pick up, refi pick up, and rates come back in a more normal band in 2024. So tell us about your expectations for the housing market as you steer this business forward.
Yeah, look, I think that I don't think I have to tell this audience. This cycle is so different than past cycles. And I think that what we have to look at is when is the cycle going to turn and how is it going to turn? It's unlikely, in my opinion, to be the Fed tweaks rates 50 basis points and we get a refi wave. It's just there's a lot more challenges in the market. I spent time in DC with the regulators, and you know, housing availability and housing stock availability is a massive issue. There's just not enough of it. So how do we get housing stock availability and get everybody working together to solve that problem? We have relationships with key builders around the country. That's an area that's doing well. Existing home sales, not so well. So we got to figure out how to unlock that. I just think that that bodes a slower rebound, not quite the refi wave that saved the industry, you know, over the last 10 years or so here and there. That's why we do have a significant purchase capability in the company, which we're building, because home purchase is a, you know, more fundamental decision and life event, I think, for most people. So it's a bit stickier. So we want to have that virtual cycle, being able to have those two channels driving both purchase and refi. And then, of course, we have a 500,000 or so clients in our servicing portfolio. So we're a major servicer, and you know that cycle can be recycled. So we're looking at how to do that. But it's going to be a challenge. I don't think there's a snapback. But as I said earlier, the thing about housing is it's such a massive asset class. So there's opportunity everywhere. We talked about HELOC. I mean, that's something that we launched in July of last year. In the space of 12 months, is a significant contributor. There are many other opportunities like that on the home ownership journey.
From a business perspective, as much as I would love a snapback, I think a snapback could actually be a very challenging dynamic for the long-term sustained recovery of the housing market. We might find ourselves in a situation with a snapback where home price appreciation shoots through the roof again, and we're back in a scenario where the Fed has the housing industry, housing sector in the crosshairs. So like, hopefully a snapback isn't exactly where we land. I like the idea of a moderate recovery that like gets us back to a healthy place.
Well, if there's a refi boom, you know, I think we're going to be positioned to take advantage of it in an efficient and productive way. But and look, it's a tough world out there, you know, with inflation, you know, and people that can remember inflationary times, it's a very difficult, you know, the Fed is fighting a good battle there, in my opinion, to bring inflation down. They have some tools to do that, one of which is interest rates, and which they're employing. You know, the question is, you know, the MBA issued a letter talking about the fact that the housing market's being penalized for, you know, and the rest of the economy is doing well. But the issue is fundamentally is to fight inflation, and that's going to take a while, in my opinion. You know, we're looking at, you know, rates that are pushing 8%, and I don't see an easy or quick decline there, but I do see some moderation once we can see more stability in the trend there. But look, I think, again, I think the housing market, you know, it's so fundamental to people's lives. We are seeing the biggest demographic shift in history with the baby boomers exiting and the millennials and the Gen Zers. And so that creates a lot of opportunity for change. And we have to change to capture those opportunities. So I think, thank God, we have a lot of technology that's coming on stream. Got to figure it out. And what things like artificial intelligence can do for the housing market. And then look, we have a regulatory situation that's complex with a lot of regulation and the people looking at, you know, policymakers looking at what is sustainable, what is safe and sound for this industry. A lot of people losing money. What does that mean? The good news, I think, is they want to support players like loanDepot. So we had very productive discussions with the GSEs and the other regulators about how they can do that in the context of loanDepot, but I think in general that applies to the whole industry.
That's great to hear that there's support from regulators. I think the topic of breach and repurchase has been so front and center at this event and in the industry for the last several quarters. It doesn't always feel like the regulators have have the support of the industry top of mind.
They've heard the message loud and clear. I can assure everybody of that. Look, we took a lot of hits last year. That's, again, part of public record. You know, our quality is really, really good now. And so that's helping. So our repurchase activity is dropping as a result of that. But, you know, there's still a lot of footfalls and things that don't make a lot of sense to have to repurchase, and the scratch and dent market's punitive. And so, you know, a lot of companies are employing different strategies to manage that exposure, including ourselves. But fundamentally, you know, high quality, good interaction with the counterparties is required to try to minimize the impact. I think they get it. I think they get the fact that they're looking for the industry to be liquid and have plenty of capital, but forcing all these repurchases is counterbalance to that. So it's just a matter of, you know, they've got their own people that they're serving, and nobody likes to take losses. So so it'll I think it's getting better, but it'll take some time.
Frank, thank you so much for joining us here at Housing Wire Annual and for sharing your expertise on stage. I really enjoyed it.